Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are pretty welcoming, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
Jonah, our guest today got his start as an intern in late night television, and I did too. And, you know, like our guest, I got to be in a late night TV sketch. I don't know if you remember this, but mine was...
I don't remember this at all. Could you tell me about it?
You don't?
No. I remember when you interned at Conan, but I don't remember seeing you in an actual sketch.
Yeah. Well, I promise that I told you about it because I told so many people about it. And then, well, I'll tell you. So basically, it was called Best Extra in a Canadian Soap Opera. And the way that I remembered that is because I just looked at some of my old resumes and I had it on my resume for a long time when I was younger and not that much younger. And I remember we filmed it and it was the summer before my junior and senior year of college. And I was in the senior society and I emailed them all the night after I did it and was like, I'm going to be on Conan tomorrow. And the late night show I interned at was Late Night with Conan O'Brien. And then tomorrow came around and they just like didn't use it. And I like was so embarrassed. And like when I was emailing everyone, I was like, I have a feeling, what if this doesn't air? Because I'm like emailing like 50 people. And then I was like, no, it's going to air. And then it didn't. And then they were like, it'll probably air tomorrow. So like I emailed everyone again and I was like, LOL, you guys, like, haha, it's actually going to air tomorrow. Sure enough, it didn't air. And then actually, this is very full circle because I just realized the person who told me that it had aired finally, like 2 weeks later, is actually a super fan of Bridgers. My good friend, Kitty Long, or now Kitty Mudo. I hope she's okay with me using her full name. She told me that her boyfriend at the time had seen it like randomly a few days later. And by that time, you know, I was so embarrassed and I was so like, I wasn't even looking.
You had stopped sending out these daily emails.
Yeah, yeah. Cause I was like, okay, I think I can't do a third one. She was like, Tom saw it, I think. And she was like, that's so cool. And I was like, yeah, I guess he's the only one who saw it or like saw it with the knowledge that I was in it. Anyway, yeah, Jonah, I'm sorry that you missed it.
Yeah, maybe I can track it down somewhere. Also, what is a senior society?
It's something that I think probably only exists at like Bragg Ivy League or like other really kind of like uppity schools where...
Elite institutions
where it was like this group of us. I was in it because I was director of my all-female sketch comedy and musical parody troupe, Bloomers. Other people were in it because they were head of the Wharton People Who Love Business or something. It was like people who are heads of groups and stuff. Like we would just get together every week or so and like, I don't know, go to bars.
It seems really weird that it would be like the heads of the business school and then you being like, I'm the head of the sketch comedy
to be fair, it was like a very varied, some people were like maybe the head of their sorority or something. And then some people who were like the president of like the international like Penn Alliance of like something. It was like a real varied. Yeah. Being the director of Bloomers was probably like not like the most prestigious of the people in the senior society, but also it definitely was the coolest.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Everyone thought we were cool.
Yeah, wow.
It's gotten cooler. It always was cool in my mind, though, and in my reality. Okay. I got to introduce our guest today because I got to hear what he's thinking about all this. I got to hear about his time at late night and I got to hear if he was in a senior society. our guest today is a hilarious writer and actor who's written on shows such as Jimmy Kimmel Live, Single Parents, and is both written and performed in shows including Corporate and Black Monday. You might also know him from his wildly popular podcast, which again, my friend Kitty is your number one fan. His podcast, I Said No Gifts. Please welcome Bridger Weiniger.
Oh, you too. I mean, there's Vanessa first. Are you in a coat? Are you wearing a coat right now?
I'm in a sweatshirt. I am in a sweatshirt. It's a very hot day in LA.
Yes, I was going to, you look like you just got out from shoveling the walks. I don't know what's going on. But let's get past that because Kitty, your friend,
yes,
reached out to me at some point and was like, I'm friends with Vanessa Bayer. And I was like, you know, you get messages from podcasts all the time. And I was like, for whatever reason, just decided to trust that she knew you.
She wasn't making it up.
She seemed very nice. I guess, however she presented herself, I was like, I guess this person knows her. But it also just may go to show that I just am willing to trust someone if they have complete sentence structure in a direct message.
Yeah, it seems like a good, yeah, sign. Yeah.
It's nice to have some confirmation.
Yes, yes.
It's not some deranged person that's...
Yeah, no. Real legit friend from... I think we actually met in our Mommy and Me class, which was pre-preschool. So I've known Kitty,
wow,
and we're still incredibly close friends. I've known her since we were like three, I guess.
That is, yeah, incredible. I have cut so many people out of my life.
Vanessa is a lot better with staying up with her childhood friends, I think, than most people. Definitely better than me.
They're still my closest friends, most of them.
Wow. That's so lovely. I mean, I've got a few.
Yeah. I mean, some people, you know, as long as you've got friends, that's all you need, you know?
I mean, if either of you have somebody reaching out to you through a direct message saying they're friends with me, delete the message.
Got it.
But it's nice to be here.
Oh my God. Yeah. We're so thrilled to have you. Now,
Bridger, were you in a senior society? Did you know what one was before 5 minutes ago?
That's such a no, I was not in a senior society. And there are so many other societies and colleges and high school, but senior society, it does feel borderline like it's an elderly group or
yes,
something. Like the naming of that does not quite work for college students.
Yes, yes.
That was my first thought as well. Yeah. And I'm just picturing Vanessa in these meetings with all, you know, because obviously like Wharton, this is like a very big like top tier business school, and I'm just picturing Vanessa like cracking jokes and like throwing sketch ideas at these like, I don't know, guys in like chinos or something. I don't know.
Well, it was like, I don't know, it was just like once you were there, I'm trying to remember what the other people did. It just shows like what a narcissist I am that I'm like, I can't really name one other role that anyone else had in it. But it was like these mostly very accomplished students because it's such an academic school.
Bridger, I was actually looking up where you went to college. I was trying to figure it out.
I went to the University of Utah.
Okay, got
it. Oh, great. Now, I'm going to ask something that is maybe controversial.
Please do. I love this.
Is that a big Mormon school or is it not necessarily?
Not necessarily. That's the University of Utah is the state school, which is in Salt Lake City. I mean, there are just by nature a lot of Mormons there.
Yeah.
But the big Mormon school is Brigham Young University,
right, that's
which
right,
BYU.
Yeah. Right. Which Jonah has a good friend, my friend as well, who's somehow related to Brigham Young, right?
You're kidding. I mean, he had a lot of children.
I think there's like a million people related to him, right? It's like crazy.
Yeah, because he had like 40 wives. And I don't think that's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like I heard a statistic, like a certain population of the town, if you like trace their DNA, is related to him or something.
And you know somebody who's a descendant.
Yes.
I mean, I know who you're talking about. I guess that sounds vaguely familiar. I don't have as good of a memory as Vanessa. So I feel like Vanessa says stuff all the time and I'm like, oh, right. Someone probably told me this and I forgot.
I think she got invited to like an event and she was like really highly regarded because she's like a direct descendant of his.
Oh, no.
Interesting.
They had like a really nice dinner.
Why do you remember this?
Yeah.
Any food details?
Do you remember what was on the menu?
No, but I remember her sort of being like, everyone sort of wanted to talk to me and be like, you're like a descendant. And it seems like she's not really interested in Mormonism. So, but I think like if she was, she would be like queen of...
She would be royalty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. When you were in school, were you in like a lot of clubs and that kind of stuff? Because I was not. I was kind of doing my own thing. I would not be interested in being in something like this. What was your vibe like?
Not in college at all. College, it was like a commuter school. So I was just driving, showing up, making zero friends, just trying to power my way through it. In high school, a little bit more, like student government, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But college, the University of Utah, well, I don't know, if I guess you got into a frat or something, but imagine me walking up to a frat house and knocking on the door. I just don't think that was going to happen. So.
And Bridger, are you from Utah? Did you?
I am.
Okay. Because that's when you set the reference of going out and shoveling the driveway. I mean, that could almost be our topic today. That is so funny.
That's such awful experience.
It was such a thing that we would do. Like, I remember on snow days, you'd like do it. And I don't know. It
makes me not want to go home for the holidays.
Yeah.
Because I'll be shoveling my parents' driveway.
Yeah.
I blew it this year. This doesn't affect you two in California, but I first snow last winter. I was lazy, didn't shovel it. And it turned into this layer of ice that was like impossible to get rid of for the entire winter.
Oh my God.
You just got to force yourself to go out there and do it that first snowfall or you're done.
So did you just have to wait for the summertime?
Kind of. Like I could shovel like fresh snow that was on top of it, but there was always this like layer of ice that was like rock hard. Like I could not get rid of. It was just so solid. And I just had to chalk it up to just inexperience and just laziness and failure.
Those trucks that come around that like distribute, it's been such a long time since living in a place that has snow that has those, but do those only go on the street? They don't go in your driveway?
You got to hire someone to plow your driveway or anything like that. Yeah. They'll do the streets. That's in it. You also have to out here hire someone to take away your trash. That's like a Massachusetts thing.
Whoa.
So you either have to get a pass to the transfer station, like the town dump or what transfer station, or you can hire a company that comes once every week or 2 weeks and picks up your garbage at the end of your driveway. But the town does not come and pick up your, you got to basically figure it out.
Are there people who just figure it out?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I actually have also heard that like the town transfer station is kind of like a social like hangout. Like people kind of hang out there and like, I live in a very small town, but when there's like a local election, like the politicians will like go to the transfer station and like meet with people. And I kind of want to get into going there. I feel like I might start hanging there, but I just haven't kind of gotten around to it yet.
I feel like they would love you there.
Yeah, that could be your senior society.
It could be my senior society. Yes.
Yeah.
I would imagine there's a lot of actual seniors hanging out there.
Right. That's what I was picturing initially.
Yeah. Probably like not a whole lot else going on, going through some bottles and I could just kind of just hang.
Now, Bridger, speaking of senior year, you were also an intern at Late Night, right? Were you in college also, or was that later on?
Yeah, I was at college. I was an intern at Letterman.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I interned there. Like, it was this weird thing where it's not as big of a bummer as it sounds, but it was like Letterman required you to be in college to be an intern. And I was like, I'm not spending semester tuition to go intern.
Right.
So I also enrolled in the local community college, just as kind of a fraud in order to go work at Letterman. And then they didn't enroll me. And so I ended up paying no money for tuition that semester. So I just basically tricked the Letterman people into thinking I was a college student for a semester. And then I went back home and graduated. It's kind of a fraud that I ran on the whole system.
So you got the Letterman gig first, then you enrolled in the community college in order to meet the requirement to do it.
Right. And then the community college, probably because the computer system wasn't quite up to snuff, just my name didn't get run through the system and they never charged me. And I was like, thank God. What a bargain.
Perfect.
So it was after you had graduated?
No, it was, this is why it's deeply confusing. It was while I was at the University of Utah, but then just I don't know how any of this worked out. It's a miracle I even got out of college now that I'm thinking about it. But I told the University of Utah I would not be attending that semester. I told the Salt Lake Community College I would be attending. Apparently, they didn't quite get the message. And so I just attended no college, but Letterman thought I was. So it worked out.
Okay, got it. And then you went back to University of Utah the next semester?
Right, right.
Wow. It's great that everyone... Well, no, here's the other thing is I think those internships, especially at the time, I don't know if yours, like, they're unpaid. So like...
Oh, yeah.
There's so many weird rules about them. When I interned at Conan, they said you had to get college credit. So basically, you also had to be in college. So I did it over the summer. But my school, and I think all Ivy League schools, sorry to keep telling you guys I went to an Ivy League school, but I think all Ivy League schools had this like form letter that they would give to internships like that, because the schools would actually not give you credit, but they wanted to make sure you could still do those internships. So they had this sort of like fraud letter that you would give to the internship place that said, like, you know, Vanessa will be eligible to apply for credit when she completes her internship. But it like basically never says like she will get credit.
Right.
And I remember once being in like the little sitting area at Conan, and there was this girl who went to like Dartmouth or something. And we basically told like the woman who like ran the internship stuff, we were like, we all are not getting credit. We're just like, this is a fraud. And she didn't care, but it was just like, it's so crazy that like these schools have thought of this and created a scam. Like, it was just such a...
That's weird that you didn't get credit, because I interned at a magazine when I was in college. And I remember the magazine was in Cleveland, so I must have done it over the summer or something. But I remember I had to pay the school, like, whatever credit was. Like, and I remember being so confused. I was, like, 20, and I was like, wait, I have to pay you, like, $3,000 for working in my hometown, nowhere near the college? Like, and they were like, yeah, you're basically... It was, like, a similar feeling when I was really little. Vanessa, I don't know if I ever told you about this. The first time I got charged sales tax, I remember it clearly. I was trying to buy this toy that was, like, 10 cents, and I had, like, a dime, and I brought it up. The person was like, it's 12 cents. I was like, no, it's 10 cents, and they're like, it's tax. And I was like,
oh my God,
why is it more money than it? I was so confused. I was like, no, this says 10 cents. Like, and then, you know, from then on in my life, it's been, you know, just
tell me that adult allowed you to buy the toy.
I'm telling you, I think it was literally something that was like less than 15 cents. I mean, it was like a penny of tax or 2 cents. I can't remember. I hope that they did, or maybe I was able to get a nickel from someone. But I remember it like blowing my mind, being like, I don't understand. Why don't they just write the price on here? Which I still think is kind of like a fair assessment.
It's funny that the things that you remember really distinctly, Jonah, are like when you got charged sales tax for the first time, when you thought that they were overcharging us in the middle school cafeteria for Pizza Hut pizza slices. Like,
yeah,
these are the things that you like.
Yeah, Vanessa's like, I was on national television when I was in college. Don't remember that. Don't remember that at all. So you graduate from school, and then did you go back to New York, or what was kind of your trajectory from there?
No, I went back home. I did some copywriting for Overstock.com, which was insane. And then eventually it was just like, well, I'm not going to do this anymore, and moved to LA just with, you know, like every insane person just moves here thinking that it's going to work out somehow. I mean, it's just such a miracle that anything ever works out.
Right.
And then it kind of slowly worked out. Now I am here.
Did your time at Letterman at all inform your choice to move to LA or anything? And also, I just want to hear, just to back up, were you ever in sketches at Letterman? Because I believe I read something that you were.
I was. I played... Do you remember Alan Coulter, the announcer of Letterman?
Right, yes.
He would be in sketches. I played his son on the show.
Okay.
Which was like truly a dream. I mean, he passed away earlier this year, but he was like one of Letterman's funniest like character bits.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You played his son. I wanted to ask you about your experience with a car crash I heard about, because when I started interning at Conan, Max Weinberg wasn't there because he was on tour with the E Street Band. But he had been there right before I left, and there was an intern who they made park his car every day. And I remember hearing about it and being like, that would be my absolute nightmare. Like, I don't like like parking a car in New York, parking a car, period. But parking a car in New York and having it be Max Weinberg's car, like, I cannot think of something that I would hate more. Like, I would probably have to quit. Like, as much as like the internship would mean so much to me. So then when I read about your parking story, it really put a chill in my spine.
Yeah. When I moved to LA, I got a job working at The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, which ended up being an extremely long production assistant job. I think I was there for like 4 years. And one of the things I had to do was frequently get his car from various locations, park it different places. And it was enormous. My spatial reasoning skills are so poor. I drive a very small car. I can barely get into like a jumbo size parking place.
Yes.
So I was driving like a full, I don't know, Cadillac SUV or something. And I had to get it from his house. And he had this very narrow driveway with this massive like concrete pole was around the corner. And, you know, I mean, I was working a job as a PA, so I'm not making any money. It's like, it was already a frustrating time. And there was always kind of a fear in the air of, you know, when you work as a PA or somebody's assistant. But I pulled around the corner and ran right into the pole. And then because of the size of the car and my spatial reasoning skills, I didn't quite know how to get out of this situation. So I backed up and hit the pole again. And so finally, I was in a position where I just had to pull forward and get out of the thing, hit the pole a third time, and then drove it back to the studio. So I did, I think, $6,000 in damage to the car. Ugh.
What was that drive back to the studio like?
Just screaming at myself. Just absolutely screaming at myself.
Bridger.
I don't want to say it worked out, but like he found out and he handled it pretty well, but ended up putting me on the show every night for like 2 weeks as like a punishment sort of thing. But when you're on the show, they have to pay you like a minimum amount of money. So I ended up being like a money making opportunity for me.
Yeah, that's great.
Sure, I'll do this. Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's like if you Google my name, I think it's probably like the third thing is Bridger Weiniger car crash or something, which is like, what's going on in this person's life? So,
right.
Speaking of controversial people you've worked for, do you have any experience with Patrick M. Byrne, the controversial owner of Overstock.com?
Yes. Well, that person's life is, I mean, even talking about him, like, is he going to come after me? But have you read about him like dating the spy and all of this bonkers? He would hold like a monthly meeting while we were working at Overstock.com and it was just weird.
Just to say, Overstock came after Craig Ferguson or it was before Craig Ferguson?
Before.
Okay, before. And that was what before you moved to LA, you worked Overstock? Yeah. Okay, so you were in Utah when you worked?
They're based out of Salt Lake City.
Great. Okay, I'm back on board. Okay, so you worked for Overstock.
Yeah, and Patrick M. Byrne, I don't think he's the CEO anymore,
okay,
but was for a long time and ran like, not only was he the CEO of the company or whatever position, he also ran what appeared to me was a conspiracy blog, even back then, about deep state stuff and all kinds of bonkers stuff. And he was always making decisions. I remember there being some story about him like dumping millions of dollars into a petting zoo that never got opened. Just weird. I mean, this is all hearsay, of course. But then you read these stories about him like dating this spy, this Russian spy.
Right.
He's completely unhinged.
Yeah, there's all this stuff. I don't understand. I got financial stuff. But I'm curious, like, would he come over and be like, hey, Bridger, like, we got to like this armoire. Like, can you spice up the copy or something?
That's such a close description of what I actually did. But I don't think I really ever interacted with him outside of him forcing everyone to go to his birthday party, which Jason Mraz played at. Wow. And everyone got like a free hot dog. It was crazy. But it's fun that he continues to be in the news cycle. I would have never expected.
I just went to the Overstock Wikipedia page and it just says controversial CEO left 2019. So I was like, oh, this could be, you know, I didn't see that coming. I thought it was going to be like, this got bought by Amazon or something.
I think he also spoke at the January 6th hearings. Is that correct?
Oh.
I think he's become part of all of this.
Oh my God. Yeah. Trump loves these like corporate guys, right? These like, you know, so that would not surprise me at all.
You've worked for some very eccentric people, Bridger. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with Bridger Weiniger.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back. Now, Bridger, before we get to your very incredible topic that we're going to talk about today, I wanted to ask you something. I was listening to your incredible podcast, I Said No Gifts, and you were talking about your name Bridger and how you're named after someone whose last name was Bridger. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, yes.
I was just going to say, our dad thinks he's the first person to ever be named Todd.
Todd.
He thinks he's the first Todd. We've talked about him many times on this podcast. And in fact, the name of my, like, you know, like my company is The First Todd Inc. He believes he was named after also someone whose last name was Todd. And he thinks his parents are the first ones who thought to use Todd as a first name. So like, it's not like they invented, like they put the letters together and were like Todd, but it was a last name before that. And his parents were the first ones to use it as a first name. By that logic, I wondered if you ever thought you might be the first Bridger.
I've often wondered about it. The only Bridgers I know, first name Bridgers,
yeah,
are younger than me.
Okay.
I don't even know them. I've heard of other Bridgers and they're younger than me. I've never met an older Bridger. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into Todd territory.
Yeah.
I don't want to be claiming this, but until maybe 10 years ago, I had never heard of another Bridger.
Yeah.
I mean, how old is your dad? I need to know more about this.
I know. Well, he's 70.
He was born in 1950. So
he's 72.
What, 72, something like that.
Okay. Because I have an uncle, Todd, I'd like to introduce him to.
Okay. And how old is your uncle? Do you know?
I feel like it's around that same time period.
Even if he's like 71, our dad will say his name is probably Theodore and he probably didn't start calling himself Todd till after. Now, because of the internet, you can sort of disprove this a little bit, but I do believe that our grandparents had an original thought of like, let's use it as a first name,
right?
You know, but maybe they weren't the only ones or the first ones, but I do tend to usually defend it. All I'm saying is if you wanted to claim that you're the first Bridger, I will defend it.
Maybe I just need to start really owning it.
Yeah.
Really just, and if somebody else pops up, we can just gaslight them and make them feel crazy.
Yeah.
No, I'm the first Bridger. I wonder if you could pay a service to find that out. I guess you could probably look in the Social Security database. Or is there such a thing? I don't know.
I don't know. Someone's got to be the first Bridger, though. I mean, I don't know why it couldn't be you.
Why can't it be me?
It might be the first person who claims it, you know?
Yeah, it's just you get there first.
I think that's our dad's logic. Well, either way, we'll support it. And
thank you. I have two on my side.
Two on your side. And we are really excited to talk about your topic today, which is witchy games we'd play as kids, such as Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. Now, Bridger, what made made you kind of want to talk about this topic, and what memories do you have of it?
Well, I was thinking about essentially the mid-90s when a lot of these sort of memories kind of... Actually, it's kind of the last time I have memories from it. Then everything else is just a mushy mess. So I feel like fifth, sixth grade... It was around the time, what was the movie I'm forgetting already about the high school witches that...
The Craft.
The Craft, thank you. That was really dominating the cultural conversation, at least in elementary schools.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Especially among girls, like the girls at my school were always talking about witches and we would sit around and have seances on the playground.
Yeah, exactly.
Try to transport ourselves, this sort of thing. But it also like... clashed with Mormonism because it's like such a dark arts thing.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like kind of this risky thing we got to play with and without our parents knowing. But parents were very concerned. I think Utah dealt with the satanic panic way longer than the rest of the country. I think like long into the late 90s, we were still thinking about Satanism and worrying about that sort of thing.
Got it.
Because I remember my fifth grade teacher kind of shutting down class one day to warn us of the evils of Ouija boards and playing cards. I mean, it just goes to show that the Utah public education system is not that far removed from the Mormon church.
Where it's like, right.
We should be learning about world history or something. And now we're talking about how Satan can come into your home and sharing ghost stories. It's a very potent memory for me. And all of my friends were so witchy. And I've yet to play Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. Have either of you played it?
I definitely played it like in fifth or sixth grade. But what's so interesting is like this was sort of pre-internet. So I'm just so curious, like how do people, every like high school kid or middle school kid across the country know about this game? Like how did stuff spread like that, right?
Right. It's so fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, just like anything else, it was just like so popular at the time, just like must have been word of mouth. And I remember playing, and I actually read this article about it that was really interesting because I didn't quite remember like what the point of it was. But I guess like the point is at first you try and lift the person with just your fingers and it doesn't work or something. And then you like chant light as a feather, stiff as a board a few times or whatever. And then all of a sudden you try again and it works. And this person was explaining like, of course, the reason that happens is like the first time you're trying it, like you're all kind of like giggling and you're like having fun. You're like, oh, it's not going to work the first time. And then the second time you're all like really focused and you're like evenly distributing the person's weight and that your fingers can actually carry like so much weight. It's like just like a physics thing. Here's the official rules. I looked it up. Okay. The official rules of light as a feather, stiff as a board is one, someone is chosen to die. Two, the chosen one lies on the floor, their arms crossed over their chest, their friends surround them. Three, everyone puts two fingers under the chosen one. They all try to lift. There is much giggling. They fail. She is too heavy. I was saying they, and now I'm saying she. They wrote she, but anyway. Four, the leader calls for silence. Maybe she lights some candles. She begins some kind of ritual chant, often call and response. The chants vary. One style goes like this. She's looking pale. And then everyone says, she's looking pale. She's looking worse. She's looking worse. She's dying. She's dying. She's dead. She's dead. I don't remember any of that. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. In unison, all girls attempt the levitation again. Step number six. This time, like magic, the quote unquote dead girl rises off the floor. And then this author, who I thought was really funny, I should have written, I'll get her name. She wrote, I shouldn't have to explain to you why for a certain kind of slumber partier, this is much preferable to calling boys and hanging up, which I thought was like so on the nose of like, yeah, my That's friends perfect. And I would like so much rather do this than be like, is Billy there? Like we'd be like so freaked out. Like this is less scary.
Right. Calling upon the forces of evil.
Yeah. It's this article from Lithub, by the way. I'll get the name of the author so you guys can look it up. But so those are the official rules. Is that kind of how you guys remember?
Yeah, that's exactly what I remember. And it's funny that you say that you can say anything. So it's, and like, it's one of those witchy things that's so clearly easily, science proves it immediately. I mean, you could all be sitting around just saying teamwork together and get the same results.
So exactly.
But I just remember light as a feather, stiff as a board. I don't remember all of this dying.
She's dead. She's pale.
I love it.
I don't remember that either. In fact, And I never saw The Craft, which is shocking to me because I really loved Neve Campbell from Party of Five. I loved everyone in it and I like probably should watch it ASAP. But I feel like that sort of did like make it so much more famous because it was like, the point is that like the person is like, because they did it in that movie. But I didn't even realize when we were doing it that the person was supposed to be like fake dead. Like I thought that they were just like supposed to be sort of like possessed or something.
Right. Ghosts were just kind of helping
making
out.
Making them light.
Yeah, The Craft must have been part of the reason that all spread so quickly. I mean, I remember I had friends, older sisters who were allowed to see the movie. And I think that a lot of the information was funneled through them. There was Adrian, there was Kurtley. Then they got into vampires.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were bringing kind of the goth energy to the neighborhood. And I think it was probably from watching The Craft. And the rest of us got to see the trailer before a cartoon or something.
So The Craft, like it was, like I remember bad stuff was happening to everyone based on like some paranormal thing. But did they play the game in the actual?
They did.
They play it in the movie. Okay.
Yeah. Again, I haven't seen it, but from my research on the game, it says that like really popularized it. Although I remember being a kid, like being really young at Ashley Cameron's house. She had like a sleepover party and it was one of those parties where like she had like paper bags. I think her mom must have like put this whole thing together. She had like paper bags and it would be like one of them had like grapes in it and it would be like, feel this bag. It's full of eyeballs. And then one would be like, this bag's full of intestines and it was like pasta. You know, and then I think we played Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. This would be well before The Craft came out. So I think it was already pretty popular and probably The Craft made the game even more.
Right. What a fun parent.
I know, right?
That would have never happened in my house.
Also, her family owns Hunan in Chagrin Falls, which is an incredible restaurant in Cleveland. Shout out to Hunan Chagrin Falls.
Did you two ever mess with Ouija boards? Was that in the repertoire?
Later on. Did either of you?
I was always too scared. I never did it. I remember my friend Jenny Binstock had like a sleepover party with a psychic. Sorry that I went to so many cool parties as a kid with a psychic. And I remember we asked her about Ouija boards and she was like, don't mess with them. And so I just like never did.
Right. I mean, they're spooky looking.
Yeah. What do you think of them? Like, do you think they're, I don't know.
For me, I want them to be real.
Yeah.
I would love nothing more than to be able to just call upon spirits and get answers. I don't feel like I would love to try just once a real serious Ouija board experience, seance, the whole deal.
Yeah.
But how do you get people on board with that?
Right. It feels like the first step of Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board when everyone's giggling.
Right.
And you can't. Right.
It also feels like now people be like checking their phone or like not paying attention. Like, I feel like you got to be really engaged to do this kind of stuff.
Well, this is a real thing that they brought up in this article, too, is that it's sad that now you can sort of disprove stuff with the internet. Like it used to be like when we would be playing Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board, for all we knew, there was no instant way to like look it up and realize like if it was or wasn't like a real thing. Whereas, and the other one that this person brought up, which I remember we did like play or like talk about a lot, and I remember this truly terrified me and I would like think about it a lot, was Bloody Mary. Do you remember that whole thing?
Oh, of course.
Where like if you said Bloody Mary in the mirror
three times
she would like come kill you or something. Or like, I don't even know, she would appear. And I remember like leaving sleepover parties where we would talk about it and like going home and like for days, just like before I'd go to bed being like, and then I'd feel like, do I need to just go in the bathroom and just do it just to like prove that it's wrong? And I think I did. I think I did it a couple of times to just, you know, like you knew it wasn't real, but you didn't have like the internet to say like, it's not real, you know, although I guess given the internet, like there probably are articles too that are like, it's absolutely real. But that one I think was the scariest to me. That I thought was like, once I heard about it, I was like, this for sure feels like it's, you know, you knew it wasn't real, but it was just like, that one really stuck with me.
It's horrifying. And good for you for running a trial.
I did. I think I ran a trial.
You love evidence. Yeah, I remember there was a difference with Bloody Mary at school versus at home for me, because at school we would go into like the boys' bathroom and there were no windows. So it was literally like a cave.
Yeah.
Just pitch black. And then at home there was like a window in the bathroom. So it was hard to get the atmosphere right for Bloody Mary.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you guys do it at school?
Like every recess, over and Candyman, which is kind of a similar thing.
Oh, yeah. Candyman was the other. All my friends saw Candyman and I didn't see it because I was too scared. But yeah, they would talk about it was a similar thing, right? Where if you said it
right.
A few times he would appear or something.
Yes, and kill you. But it right. never happened to any of us. I mean, going into the bathroom at all as an elementary schooler was kind of a nightmare experience.
Yeah.
So yes. then to be add Bloody Mary to that was a whole new layer. But maybe I should try Bloody Mary at home. Well, my boyfriend's out of town. I would probably not sleep for nights.
Too scary.
Yeah, when he's back, we'll play the game together.
When you did it in school, would a bunch of you go in at once? Because I would feel like that would be comforting to be not by yourself.
I think it was less comforting because I think there was like the social tension all of a sudden. And there was always somebody that might try to scare everyone.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea of going into a pitch black elementary school bathroom alone just as a child and calling into a mirror. That's not a...
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Either way, it's scary. It's so scary. Jonah, were you scared of Bloody Mary or Candyman stuff?
I guess I was kind of scared of it. I felt like I was more... Like me and my friends, I thought would more just like go run around outside, maybe like throw eggs at something, like more like very low grade, like troublemaking, I guess. More of that and less like kind of magical stuff, or more like shaking up 2 liter bottles of soda and spraying them everywhere. Or just
right,
very,
that was like a thing that you love to do at Temple,
very,
right?
Very kind of wasteful, immature stuff, less kind of like esoteric stuff. But I think I dabbled in it, maybe.
Yeah.
You got to dabble.
It was really a scary thing.
A weird thing about Ouija boards to me is the toy aspect. Do you remember like
yes.
walking around the toy aisle as a kid and seeing the Ouija board just sitting next to like chutes and ladders or operations?
Yes.
Is always so, they don't do a great job of making it look like a toy. It still looks like a witch's tool, and then it's just sitting there at the back of Toys R Us or whatever. That was always so unsettling for me.
You're absolutely right. You know, that's the craziest thing about Ouija boards, I guess, is like the only place you can get them is like a toy store in like the board game aisle.
Right.
It's so messed up. It's so strange.
What is the marketing like? There are marketing departments at Milton Bradley probably meeting about the Ouija board.
I bet they like don't ever have to advertise them because they're such strong word of mouth.
Yeah,
like,
I've never seen an advertisement for one ever. But yeah, I guess they probably have them at like every toy, and it must have instructions in it. And you know, these CEOs of Milton Bradley are probably making tons of money off these things.
Okay.
They probably cost them nothing to make. They mark up the price.
Hand over fist.
Yeah, they probably haven't been modernized even that much because there's like... They're going to sell no matter what. Now, I feel like there was a Ouija board. Have there been Ouija board and Bloody Mary movies?
There's definitely been a Ouija board movie, which I saw and was really hoping would scare me and didn't.
It didn't. Was it for kids?
No, it was for adults.
And it didn't scare you?
Not at all. I was ready to be scared, and I walked away very disappointed.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about with the Ouija board being scared? Well, maybe ghosts come out of it or something.
What's the
know.
Plot? Like two kids, like they're like going in the basement. Looking for like something, they find this dusty Ouija board, and
that seems about right. I don't remember it exactly, but I remember just being kind of bored. It's a period piece, which I appreciated. I think it's like in the 70s.
Okay.
And so it's like, you know, 70s kids, the parents are at work or whatever, and we find the Ouija board. But that could be also completely wrong. Maybe that's what I wanted the Ouija board movie to be.
Yeah. The guitar player Metallica, Kirk Hammett, is really into Ouija boards and has a lot of guitars you can buy with Ouija board graphics on them.
There's
a
new one. That actually is purple one. It's pretty cool, but I think it's like $3,000.
Is he like a believer in Ouija boards?
He's one of those guys that's really into like, I feel like there's like a subset of like kind of heavy metal musicians that are really into like Frankenstein and Ouija boards and this like classic horror aesthetic. And
right.
I think he's one of those kinds of guys.
Okay.
Is a vibe I get. But he's always had these Ouija board guitars. But I don't know if you could really use it as a Ouija board.
Right.
I think it's just more like, yeah.
If you're on stage in front of thousands of screaming fans and you need to contact the dead.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm surprised there hasn't been a Bloody Mary movie.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It feels
too.
Like something we would all.
It looks like there has been, and it wasn't super.
Oh.
Bloody Mary 2006. I'm seeing something on IMDb. Oh, yeah, there's a few, you guys. There's one called The Legend of Bloody Mary. There's one called Mary, Mary, Bloody Mary, which might be a cartoon. This Bloody Mary movie that I'm looking up now.
Are we sure that these movies aren't about the drink?
They're all tomato juice.
No, this one is from 2006. When a group of psychiatric hospital nurses invoke the spirit of Bloody Mary, a supposed urban myth, the slaughter begins. First, a young nursing assistant disappears, her body never found. You know, when these descriptions are really long, you can tell the movie's really low budget because like somebody who like was in it or like, you know, like
it's like when someone makes their own Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Like, and it makes you feel sad.
And it's such a long description.
Every like obscure detail of their life somehow is on there. Like yes. He went to fourth grade. He liked art class, but didn't really like this class. And you're like, huh, who wrote this?
Yeah. This movie was made by, I'll just read you the last sentence of the description. Bloody Mary's legend is real. Her vengeance is fatal. And to free her, all you have to do is say her name. This was made by Echo Bridge Home Entertainment. It sort of says dash Echo Bridge Home Entertainment, which makes me think Echo Bridge Home Entertainment wrote this synopsis
and wanted credit for authorship.
Wanted credit. Summary. Now, I don't know where you watch this movie. I don't believe it came out in theaters. Oh, wait. This movie's just called Bloody Mary. It's not to be confused. So there's been a few, it seems, extremely low budget movies, unlike the Ouija board movie, which seems like it at least came out in theaters, but just wasn't very good.
Right. That was definitely a movie that I saw in the last 10 years that had actual actors and appeared to be a movie for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Bridger, would you rather be a copywriter for Overstock.com or Echo Bridge Home Entertainment?
Echo Bridge Home Entertainment. Okay. If I had written that description, I would be able to retire. I get on IMDb and type that up and then just hit the golf course.
Love it.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Bridger Weininger.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back. So Bridger, now we're going to play a game with you that we find to be pretty fun. Okay. It's called
I can't wait.
Legit Moan or Unnecessary Groan.
Legit Moan. Unnecessary Groan.
And it's based on our hometown, Cleveland, Ohio. Our local paper was called The Plain Dealer. And they had this segment called Monday Moaning, where people would write in with their complaints. And they would print like several of these complaints every Monday. Now, this column is now defunct. It went away like a little over 10 years ago. But they do have archives. And so what we did today is we picked a few Monday moaning moans from the archives, and we're going to go through each one of them, and we're each going to say whether we think it's a legit moan or an unnecessary groan.
Oh, I can't wait for this.
All right. I can kick us off. Here's the first one.
Okay, great.
This is from December 2009. That person did not list the city. Sometimes I list the city where they're from. Sometimes I don't. But this one says, "Hey, baby boomers, thanks for selling out America. There are no middle class jobs. Everything is manufactured overseas. And the country has never been worse." Typical. Sorry. Typical Woodstock 69 mentality. No responsibility and no scruples. The greatest generation yielded the greediest generation. Oh, so this is a very kind of like
general one.
General moan. I mean, this is about basically a whole generation who embody what this person describes as the Woodstock 69 mentality. And I'm just curious, Bridger, what are you picturing the person who wrote this letter into the Cleveland newspaper was like? What are your thoughts about this person and sort of their mentality?
Well, first, I'm trying to picture what age this person possibly could have been.
So yeah. Was I.
Yes. Because they're still upset about people who were probably like 18 to 25 in 1969.
Right.
Yeah. Furious about this view. So this person was like a 110-year-old man writing into the newspaper. Yeah. Yes.
So this is in 2009. So baby boomers were how old in 2009?
They must have been in like their 50s.
Yeah, probably their 50s. I mean, so this person thinks that, you know, the baby boomers are responsible for no jobs, the fact that things are manufactured overseas, and just the country has never been worse. And yeah, and this is that Woodstock 69 mentality you hear so much about. It's a lot of blame with not a lot backing it up, I guess.
What if it's from like a very conservative, like Gen Xer who's like,
right,
hey, boomers, like, thanks for screwing everything up. I think it's probably from an older person.
But I think when they say the greatest generation yielded the greediest generation, this person is, it would be really funny if a kid who was like, oh, the greatest generation was so great, but then those boomers, oh, they ruined everything.
Right. It'd be someone like Michael J. Fox's character.
This is a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Wearing a tie. I mean, let's take into account, what was the economy in this situation? This is
2009.
Right before the whole collapse, right after the collapse.
This is probably, I think this is December 09. When did the economy collapse? I think this is probably shortly after. It was in 09, right? This is the last month of 09.
Right.
Looks like the Great Recession is a downturn from 07 to 09.
Okay.
Things are about to get better, but it's looking maybe still pretty bleak here. And that Woodstock 69 mentality has probably never been bigger.
Yeah.
Except in 1969, maybe.
Yeah, peace, love, like manufacture things abroad.
I almost thought this said Woodstock 99 mentality, which would have made maybe more
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like that was 10 years ago from when this was written. So it's like, okay, that's like...
This is someone who was like, when all the like stuff was going on in 1969 with Woodstock and like people being hippies, this person was like in their, you know, like corporate like suit, like being like, must be nice. You know, I have to go to work every day and these kids are just like, you know, listening to music and smoking pot, you know, like, and this person kind of never let go of that. And then it's probably as soon as the, you know, economy started tanking, they were like, well, they were gonna, you know, what did they think? They weren't gonna have to ever pay for that. Like, this person feels like they're almost proud of, like, you know, it's like almost a told you so situation.
You made your bed.
Yeah. It's a little smug. It's a little smug. Yeah.
So we're saying we're picturing kind of an aging Don Draper. Don Draper in a retirement home. He was too busy at Sterling Cooper and the hippies were running wild. And then the country fell apart 4 decades later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the real question, Bridger, do you think this is a legit moan or an unnecessary groan?
This is such a tricky one because, look, I mean, he was maybe a little ahead of his time with the whole boomer complaining.
Right.
Look, it's hard to say where Don Draper is coming from in this situation, but I'm going to side with him with the boomers being irresponsible, but I'm not going to side with the Woodstock 69 mentality. It doesn't quite add up for me.
Yeah.
So, but I'm gonna say legit.
All right.
Legit,
I think you bring up some good points. I gotta say unnecessary groan. I think that this person is
groan.
Too vague. It's just blaming the boomers for everything. And I also think this.
Yeah.
Just that phrase, this Woodstock 69 mentality, just yeah. gives me a clue just how out of touch this person is to use that phrase in 2009, even.
Yeah.
40
yeah.
years later.
40 years
and
later.
Say, that's why, you know, the economy's bad. I don't know. I'm gonna say this is unnecessary groan. Vanessa, what about you?
Yeah, I gotta say, Bridger, I think you're being very generous to this person by saying this is legit. But I agree. I find this to be an unnecessary groan. Just feels like a very general complaint for this person
groan.
To make about a whole group of people when actually, you know, it seems like this person just has it out for younger people.
This newspaper article seems to be kind of a fun thing for, you know, little pet peeves, and this person's just writing in about the state of the world is a very funny way to express your
yeah.
views.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yes. And speaking of pet peeves, Vanessa, our next one is pretty incredible.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So here's the next one. Spring showers have begun, but I'm already tired of the local TV stations breaking in regular programming to announce there is a storm approaching the viewing area. Do they think we're all blind and can't see it's raining outside? Isn't the creeper at the bottom of the screen good enough? It wouldn't be so bad if they would just take 1 or 2 minutes to announce the areas of concern, then go back to the program. No, they have to try to justify all of their fancy, expensive, state-of-the-art weather monitoring equipment and stay on the air for 20 or 30 minutes. This complaint comes from Medina, Ohio, in May 2010. Now...
This is someone who didn't make it through meteorology school and is just yeah. so bitter.
Yeah. This person is saying, like, we have no need for you to really, like, spell out that a storm is coming because we can see it's raining outside. It feels like this is coming from the perspective of someone who's going to stay at their house and doesn't need to, like, be traveling during the storm at all. But I think the point that this person is missing is that these storm warnings are for, like, people who are sort of, like, active and, like, might interact with the weather outside.
Who aren't just dedicated to daytime TV.
Yes.
Right. You know, let's not forget this person is sort of saying there's an ulterior motive by the network. They're spending all this money on this state-of-the-art equipment, the Doppler machine or whatever, and they're saying, we got to stay on for a half an hour. We bought all this stuff. We got to interrupt this person's favorite show just so we can show our boss that, like, this equipment was worth it.
Yeah.
That's a big leap for me.
Yeah, I love the idea of the boss of the TV station getting to work and seeing all this brand new equipment and being like, oh, shit, what are we going to do with this? We've got to find some way to use this.
Yeah.
Interrupt some programming.
Yeah. Interrupt the program. Go in there. Show what these machines can do. It's funny because often they are. Like, these people are so going in with their own, like, biases. Like, they have such strong... But yeah, Bridger, what do you think? Do you think this person has a point that, like, again, just to be specific, it seems like they wish that the creeper, they call it, at the bottom of the screen, they think that's good enough. And they think if you would interrupt the show for 1 to 2 minutes, that's okay. But I guess they're talking about interrupting, staying in the air for 20 or 30 minutes. Now,
that's
I don't remember that happening. And if they are staying on the air for 20 to 30 minutes, it's probably a pretty serious storm. Again, I don't think the excuse of we can see it's raining outside takes the place of, like, warning people about
how much it's going to rain, where it's moving, what time it's going to stop. Like, it's not just looking out the window gives you all that information.
Yeah. But Bridger, do you think this person has a valid moan, a legit moan?
Absolutely.
Legit
I'm completely
moan.
On their side. This is as legitimate as you're going to get, I think. It's every man for himself. And television is so important, especially between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. To have some weatherman showing up for a half hour, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, no, no. The creeper is enough. We all know the creeper is enough.
The creeper at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Bridger. I think that, you know, maybe we can compromise somewhere in the middle. But yeah, I think maybe coming on for a minute or two, I agree, a half hour is too long. And I just wonder if maybe some of this isn't being secretly funded by the, you know, the weather industry who wants to get more equipment sold and a tax write-off. And yeah, I think a half hour is too long. You say it's raining, you say where it's going, when it's stopping, something changes, you pop back in, but I don't think we need a half hour of it. So I think this is a legit moan also.
Legit.
Questionable, but legit.
You guys have really come around on this person who's clearly kind of... I deeply disagree with both of you. I think this is definitely an unnecessary groan. I think this person, for no other reason than this person's logic of, we can see it's raining outside and this is a way for them to like validate spending all this money on fancy weather equipment. I think those two points weaken what this person's asking for so much that I can only consider it an unnecessary groan. If they are coming on for 20 to 30 minutes, that seems long. Again, sometimes we have an unreliable narrator in these situations. I don't believe that that's actually happening unless it's truly like a tornado or something. Like, I don't trust this person. I think they've got it out for weather people. I think, like you said, Bridger, maybe there's a world where they tried to go into meteorology or something and it just didn't work out for them. So I'm not on board for this one. I'm calling this one an unnecessary groan.
All right.
Jonah, would you like to read the last one?
Yes, fair enough. So our final one, short but sweet. Why do advertising agencies and their clients think anyone wants to see their children in commercials? The home-produced ones are the worst. Only the parents and grandparents think these kids are cute. To the rest of us, they are just annoying. For me, it indicates a company to avoid because of the lack of professionalism. And this is from Lakewood, Ohio, where I used to live, August 2010. I had moved by then. Yeah, so this person thinks kids in commercials are annoying. Only the parents or grandparents think these kids are cute. And it takes it one step further and said, if you have a kid in your commercial, I won't use your company because I think you're unprofessional.
This person's never bought a product.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is such a bizarre one because it's also so contingent on like what the product is. It would be some of these, like if something geared towards kids, it would be so weird to not have a kid in it. But like, I'm just picturing like a toy commercial and like a kid walking on the screen or a diaper commercial and this guy being like, this is so unprofessional.
I think what they're talking about, because they say the home produced commercials are the worst. I think what they're talking about when a kid's like, Burger Law Firm, if it were me, I would trust my dad and you should too. But also I'm like, first of all, those commercials are actually cute to anyone except for a cynic like this person. But even like if this person's complaint was like, I think it's shitty of people to like exploit their kids and like put them in commercials for their local businesses.
Right.
Just find another tactic and don't make your kid. That would be one argument to make. Although I know that if our parents had tried to put me in commercials as a kid, I would have truly loved it. But like, I understand the argument of that. But like, just to say, don't do it because they're only cute to you and to me, they're annoying.
No, this person isn't saying just to me, they're annoying. He's saying only the parents and grandparents think these kids are cute. To the rest of us, they're just annoying. They're saying not only to me, to everyone else in the world, unless parents and grandparents, they're annoying. And it's like, don't speak for me. Like, I never said it.
Yeah. It's basically actually saying like, kids are only cute to their parents and grandparents. Yeah. To everyone else, they're annoying.
They're objectively annoying and ugly.
Yeah.
We all hate children in every medium.
I get that, you know, low budget commercials can be tough to watch. And I get if you're working without a budget, sometimes having your kid or a family member or something is a good way to get people on board. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. How long is this commercial? 30 seconds? Like, is it that big of a deal to you? I mean, this is...
Yeah.
Bizarre to me. This person's so upset about this to write a letter.
There must have been a particularly annoying commercial with a local child that they had a beef with.
Yes. Yeah. I would love to know the commercial that inspired this letter.
Me too. Part of me thinks it would be really hard to find because I bet it's a local commercial that only aired in Cleveland. And I'm trying to think, like, there were those commercials, but they were kind of teenagers by then that the Botniks used to do for their, like, dad's jewelry company, where it would be like, or you could buy a watch for your girlfriend who's always late.
What?
Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
I can't remember what their jewelry store was, but they, like, put their sons, like, in the commercials. But they weren't, like, little kids. Like, they were, like, teens. They were, like, prom age.
Okay, so that doesn't work for me. Also, like, the tactic of, like, buy some jewelry for your horrible girlfriend. Does everything wrong.
Maybe it was like, buy a watch because your girlfriend always says you're late. But what I said first seems more snappy.
The other thing makes her sound terrible too. Buy some jewelry for your nagging girlfriend.
Right. Either way, tell your girlfriend. Either way, your girlfriend's a bitch. And if you're not in time, she's probably going to dump you, even though it's, you know, why would you want to be with her anyway? There was one for, this might have been national. There was one for these toys called Cool Tools, where this kid would come out and say, cool tools. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't think that was national.
There was one for like a video rental store where like a kid would come out of a pile of like VHS tapes or like DVDs and be like, so-and-so's like video rental store. Those are the only ones I can think of. It was unless this was like Cars for Kids was already around, but I don't think it was around yet in 2010, although I could be wrong.
I think this is a big thing still. I mean, I feel like sometimes I listen to the radio in the car and they'll be like, if you need your roof fixed, my dad's the best. Like, I think this is like totally. just like a common marketing tactic.
Yes. I'm just saying in 2010, what was it that they were specifically? But it probably was, you're right. Like, it probably was a variety. It's been common for a long time. It was probably a variety of things. I'm sorry that I named somebody.
Bridger, what are your thoughts on this one?
This is, for me, this is a real tough one. I'm going to say unnecessary. I will say my problem with kids in commercials is when they're coached to act younger than they already are, when they're like doing some speech impediment or they're drawing their R the backwards way or whatever. It's like, none of this is real to childhood. What are we doing?
Right.
That's very, also I have a real, seeing kids in sunglasses always bothers me. It's real annoying.
Got it. Not to interrupt you, but Jonah, I feel like you actually used to write your J's backwards on Jonah. Do you remember that?
It's possible. I don't know.
I could be wrong. Okay, go ahead, Bridger.
But you never see the backwards J. It's always a backwards R or S.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's put some other letters backwards and make it more authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a K in the case of corn. Right. I think they had a backwards K. That's pretty edgy. So Bridger's saying this is an unnecessary groan. I'm with Bridger. I think that the writer of this letter is the kind of person that would also complain about the Woodstock 69 mentality.
Who you supported, saying, by the way, just moments ago. Okay. I did. You both support it.
I did. I think I was influenced a little by Bridger. I think Bridger made some really good points.
Thank you.
But this, I'm coming down a little harsher on this one just because I think, you know, this person is speaking for me and I don't appreciate that. I don't think, you know, having a kid in commercial means your company's unprofessional. I don't think that all kids are annoying to you if you're not a parent or grandparent. And I don't think this person really understands how advertising works, but they're kind of using word like big words like professionalism in an effort to kind of like sound like they know what they're talking about. And that is also, we talked about a common theme in these letters.
Yes.
Not in these letters maybe, but on change.org too, where people will make these very bizarre arguments, but use a lot of big words.
Yes.
And think that that makes it sound more legitimate. So I'm saying
exactly
unnecessary groan, you know, this isn't really hurting anyone.
Groan.
It's not that big of a deal. And, you know, move on. Vanessa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like just because, again, if this person was complaining about kids being in commercials because they thought it was like exploiting them in any way, again, as a child, I would have absolutely killed to be in a commercial. But I think that's one thing. But their argument just being that they're only cute to their parents and grandparents and that everyone else finds them annoying, like that reasoning. And then they're saying, and therefore, I think these companies have a lack of professionalism. Their reasoning is so unprofessional. Yeah. Now, I'm supposed to be like, oh, I take my cues from this person who's like, these kids are so annoying and they're only cute to their grandparents. Like that's absolutely not. I'd love for this person to like look in the mirror when they talk about a lack of professionalism. Okay. But so for all the reasons that we've said too, I say this is definitely an unnecessary groan.
Unnecessary.
And I think this person needs to maybe lighten up a little.
Just a bit.
And if there's a specific commercial that's bothering them, like the Botnick's jewelry commercial, say that. You know?
Right. Name names.
Right.
Don't take it out on all of these sweet kids.
The local youth.
Now, Bridger, we've had such a blast with you today.
I've had a wonderful time.
As have we. And where can people find you?
I hate telling people. I have a podcast called I Said No Gifts. And that's essentially the only place at this point. And then, you know, maybe I'll be watching television and I'll have worked on one of the things. But and then the internet's, I guess I'm on Instagram. I don't know.
Great.
I'm trying to push away from all of this. So at Twitter, I've abandoned years ago.
Yes.
Instagram, I'm hopelessly addicted to.
Right.
But I'm, you know, you type my name in and you'll probably find me somewhere.
Got it. Great. Incredible.
Beautiful self-promotion.
Beautiful. No, I love that. I love that.
Someone just shoot me.
No, you're a dream and an angel, and we had the best time with you.
Thank you for having me.
It was so much fun. Listen, if you guys enjoyed this, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones like the witchy games that we played when we were kids.
Thanks so much, Bridger.
Thanks, you guys. That was so much fun.
Thank you, Bridger. This was so great.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.